LGBTQ community. And I did that with Claire Robson and Gloria Gutman, both of SFU. We found that the translations we got when we put our posters into Punjabi were a little bit stilted because there was no queer language. So it was, there was no, the words were like women who love women rather than any term that meant lesbian. So it was a little bit not what we wanted. So this time round, we've identified a queer Punjabi translator. So who will use the language that is currently being used in Punjabi to describe identities and relationships that fall under this rainbow banner? So we wanted it to actually speak to queer South Asians as well.
Mm, for sure.
And we have had people being interviewed there as well.
So one of the last questions I had for you was just, when can people begin to access these archives, if there is a timeline for this project?
There is a timeline. We want the final interviews will hopefully be before July. The transcribing is currently going on, and that transcribing will include English subtitles on all of them so that there's access for people who have hearing disabilities. So we will have English subtitles along the bottom. Then we're aiming for a September launch. So that will be a public event in Surrey in September, where people will be invited to come and view. You know, we'll have some TV screens up and we'll be showing little clips of different things. And just we'll invite everybody who has participated and those who have supported the project. And we will have an event to launch it. And then after that, the city archivists will have to do their legal stuff. Maybe we can get the legal stuff done before that so that when we cover up in September, it's already on their YouTube channel. But I will also have access to it. So if people know about it, say, can I get access before? I can't quite do that because of legal matters, but once we've got it all done, it will be available somewhere in the fall of 2026. I should also say at this point that the reason I can do this project is funding from the federal government. I was very fortunate via Surrey Pride to get a Women and Gender Equality grant from the federal government, which has really helped me in doing this work.
Once again, that was our conversation with Jen Marchbank, a professor of gender, sexuality, and women's studies at SFU, who is currently working on a project that will include a collection of oral history interviews from the 2S LGBTQ plus community in Surrey. This has been Danny Nesvitarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This interview would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca. Once again, you're tuned in to Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. This is your host for the hour, Danny Nesvitarani, and that was my interview with Jen Marchbank, a professor at SFU, who's currently working on an archive to share the lived experiences of the 2S LGBTQ plus community in Surrey, BC. If there is anything of note or of interest in any of these interviews that you want to talk about, any feedback you want to provide, just any comments you want to give, you can always call in or text at 778-782-2573. That is 778-782-2573. If you text, we will receive it. We do have a program for that, so make sure to text in and we will respond. Anyways, we have one final interview for today, and this is my interview with Vancouver City Councillor Sean Orr on a motion that he recently passed to introduce a low-income transit pass for the city of Vancouver. Just to start, the first question I wanted to ask and one thing I was curious about is just if you could tell me about the advocacy that led up to you putting forward this motion. When did you first decide that this was something that you wanted to pursue?
Well, it's sort of been a long time coming in terms of, you know, COPE and my party has long advocated for affordable transit. My predecessor, Gene Swanson, as a part of a campaign called All on Board, was able to get free transit for kids under 12. Of course, there's an opportunity to increase that to teens as well, up to under 18, and that's something that I've been looking at. But really, it was this group called Movement. Movement Metro Vancouver Transit Riders, and they've just been doing a lot of advocacy around the low-income transit pass. I met with them, I think last fall, and they had a number of sort of asks for transit, and I was heading to UBCM, and I said I'd try and raise it with the minister, and I did. But you have like at UBCM, you have like 5 minutes in a room with all the counselors and one MLA, and it's really difficult to get anything in there. So I decided to move a motion on it, and I did a bit of research and looked at all the other cities that are doing it, and Vancouver's one of the only cities in Canada that isn't doing it, and I thought, we should be leaders in this and not sort of playing catch up. I think, this is especially one of the most expensive cities on the planet, let alone in Canada. So it just seemed like a no-brainer, and I'd been sitting on it for a while, actually. The way that council moves, you're trying to plan like your weeks. And I knew there was only a few coming up because FIFA's here, and so there isn't a lot of meetings and during this time. The next one is actually July 15th. And in July, I think 28th or 29th is actually the last meeting before the election, the last chance. So I was just trying to strategize when to fit it in, and I did so the other day, and it passed, but it passed with some amendments, of course.
Sorry, that was just another thing I wanted to ask about, just how you felt about those amendments that were made.
I mean, it's part of a larger trend that the majority does. There's actually an article about it in the Georgia Strait, about how if they don't want to look, I mean, if they don't want to look bad voting no on something, they'll just amend it to sort of be meaningless or just water it down. I mean, there was, I think the biggest one and the one that spurred the article was a motion by Councillor Fry, actually, to amend asking for a sex worker planning position. And that really sort of initiated the article. But I mean, this is a practice that has been going on for months. They just really weaken a motion, and they'll change anything if it has anything monetary to do with the city. They'll be like, no, they'll cut that out. And so in this case, we were looking at grants. We were looking at staff time and things like that. So they switched it to just purely an advocacy motion, and I'm fine with that. It didn't really gut the motion like some of the other times when they do it, or like cooling kits where they, no, we need emergency funding for cooling kits because this is going to be one of the hottest summers on record, and this isn't a lot of money. We should do an emergency motion to fund this. And they didn't, and they just said, let's send a memo. And it was, so they didn't completely gut my motion. So I was fine to vote in favor of the amendment and just get it going, and like just put it back into TransLink's sort of lap, so to speak, because they're aware of this. They've approached this subject before. I think in 2024 they've looked at it, and that's a again, a larger question around TransLink funding, which I'm happy to sort of go into as well, but.
With TransLink in particular, it always feels like every fee increase is sort of given with this reasoning behind, like, we just don't have enough money for these projects and for to maintain the infrastructure that we do have. So therefore, like, this is the reason for the increase. And the reason for this low-income transit pass is just that for a lot of Vancouverites, that's not a sustainable practice.
I mean, 4% last year or 5% this year. I mean, and to the pass alone, that's $120 extra a year for the BC or for a pass. I mean, that's a big chunk of change for people, right? Everything else is going up. Food prices are going up. Rent, of course, is going up, even though they say rents are down. It's not true. That's a whole nother whole other episode, I'm sure. But it's frustrating. So that's why I brought this in. It's frustrating in a number of ways, just because I don't think TransLink is necessarily like a badly managed company or anything like that. And you go to other cities and then you come back to Vancouver, and we do have an incredible transit system. There's gaps, absolutely. There's things we need. We need bus priority signals on 49th. We need bus rapid transit and things like that. We need there's a laundry list of things that we could improve. But of course, funding is always the question at the end of the day. And I think it was 2014 or so where or maybe I'm not sure, but there was a referendum in Vancouver to increase the sales tax by 0.5%, and that would have fully funded transit, like they're asked. Here's the thing: you never put taxation to a referendum. 9 times out of 10, that's going to fail. And I think Christy Clark at the time was the premier, and I think she knew that. I think she knew that it was going to fail, so that she didn't, have to. She could say, "Well, the people decided," It's just like that's no one's ever going to vote for more taxes, right? And it became a referendum, unfortunately, on TransLink. It became a referendum on whether we like TransLink, and that wasn't the question. The question was, should we fund transit? So that became politicized, and that was a mess. But even going further back, 1993, and I think I said this in council because Sarah Kirby-Young brought up the funding question in council. And 1993, the NDP proposed a new vehicle levy, I think for all of Metro Vancouver, which would have been done through ICBC. And I think it was at the time it was $75 for every new vehicle, I believe. And that's in like $93, right? So I mean, that's 30 years where we could have had consistent funding for trying. We could have SkyTrain out to Chilliwack, with that kind of money, right? Like it's just and it's just this political sort of cowardice that happens. There was this backlash, from drivers, and, oh, why should I be paying for poor people to take the bus kind of thing, and so the NDP caved back then, so they caved to that. But and then it became an election issue in this last election, where there was, Kennedy Stewart was entertaining the idea of looking at congestion pricing. And then ABC kind of put up these billboards, Kennedy's road tax, Kennedy's road tax, and it really freaked people out. And so, like, yeah, there's this kind of perennial kind of populist kind of rhetoric that goes into transportation, unfortunately, and this kind of, this weird battle between car drivers and transit, even though it's actually harmonious, and the more people that take transit, the better traffic will be, and the better, like just the other day we saw ABC, kind of gut a Vision Zero mobility plan, safety plan. They changed. We were looking the plan looked for like a select streets. I think it was like commercial high streets. So think like Commercial Drive, Denman, Robson, and going down to like 30 kilometers an hour. And then they put out this post saying, the non-ABC councillors want to slow you down or something like that, and they want all arterial streets to be 30 kilometers. And like, first of all, it was a staff report. It wasn't an opposition motion. It was just, and secondly, that's just, you're just lying to people now. So and they're just lying to their base, and they're riling their base up. So there's a lot of that comes with transportation, unfortunately. There's just a ton of politicization of it, especially the funding side of things. You know, it's really frustrating. You know, cities in Europe, obviously, and cities across Canada too, they just do it, you know, and it's just this culture shift that happens, you know. Like Amsterdam in the 70s didn't look like Amsterdam now. And it took political will, it took big thinking and long-term thinking. And unfortunately, in politics, long-term thinking is often lacking because we're just thinking about the next election, right?
I think it's very easy for people's perceptions of transportation to be really skewed. Because I think, you know, when you think about it, anyone who's ever driven, I think, has been in a situation where someone has sped up and cut them off just to like end up at the same red light. And showing that like there are studies, there are verifiable pieces of evidence that show that slowing down roads in different areas don't actually affect your commute to the extent that some would just assume off of just thinking like, oh, slow equals bad.
And staff actually described that in the council meeting. You know, if you're driving faster, you have to leave more room. So there's these big gaps. And then, you know, but if you're driving slower, you've actually got more vehicle density in that same stretch of road. There's more vehicles that can travel along that stretch of road. And they're also looking at signal priorities and in terms of basically creating a green wave, but like a slower green wave, right? So like you said, where people speed up and just hit a red light and they speed up and hit a red light, you know, no, it'd be like a 40 kilometer hour green wave on select streets. Again, not every street, but select streets. Streets like Hastings. Hastings is already, you know, it's 30 kilometers an hour down there, and nobody goes 30 kilometers an hour. I think Movement or Vision Zero Vancouver, the advocacy group, looked at some stats, and I think 75% of people go over 60 or something like that. I don't have the stats. It's wild, and it's the deadliest corridor in Canada for pedestrian deaths. And it's because it looks and feels like a highway, like it's huge. And well, it technically is a highway route, which is why it's difficult for this city to kind of do any kind of implementation. It actually is a provincial road, not a city road, but that's a different kind of can of worms to open. But yeah, and so I voted for this. I'm talking less about the transit pass now and just talking about Vision Zero, but I voted for that to receive that, and I voted against, you know, lowering or having speed be 50 kilometers on, you know, whatever. But there were some good things in that Vision Zero report, like looking at road design changes for Hastings, looking at just like, I don't know how they described it, basically like a chicane kind of system that just kind of like slows people down naturally. You know, and more automated enforcement and things like that. I mean, you know, I've been very vocal on this. We spend a lot of money on police in Vancouver. We spend $500 million, 25% of the city budget. And, you know, there's no reason there should be a single, you know, fatality for pedestrians. And yet here we are. And then you look at things like, oh, enforcement's actually down. And that's really frustrating to me. You know, I think the police are kind of against automated enforcement, for obvious reasons, but you know, I just think I just think this whole thing becomes politicized. We need safer streets and we need cheaper transit. And you know, you look at what Mamdani's done in New York, and you just do the damn thing. Just do it, and it works, you know. Yeah, so that's my stance.
Yeah, I mean, they are two separate motions, but like I think what you're getting at is that it is holistic in a sense, advocating for accessible and equitable public transit while also looking at how roads can be safer. I mean, I've spoken about this with like say like the mayor of New Westminster, who they're adopting a Vision Zero approach as of late, and one of the cities that he really was basing the approach that they're taking on was like Hoboken, New Jersey, that hasn't had like a single road death in over a year. So like these things are possible is what you're saying, but it's just the political will needs to be there.
Everyone loves talking about Hoboken. It's no, I mean, but it's real. I mean, like, you know, it's a real thing that they did. They went for it, and it just takes political will, you know. And like, I look at New Westminster, and they're leading on a lot of things. They're a small town, you know, but they're doing things that I wish Vancouver would be doing. And shout out to Patrick Johnson and all the councillors in New West, like, you know, Nadine and Tasha and Ruby and Jamie McElroy. They're just doing really progressive things, and it's really frustrating that Vancouver seems to be kind of going in the opposite direction on a lot of different issues.
Yeah. For the next question, I guess, do you see, say a low-income transit pass does get implemented in Vancouver, is that, do you see that as kind of just being like a first step, or something that can kind of open the floodgates for more initiatives and ways to make transit more accessible?
Yeah, I mean, it's not the last step. I mean, I think, I would love free transit for everyone. I mean, that's the goal, right? I mean, that's the end goal for me. I mean, I just think we're in a climate crisis, and I just think that people tend to forget that, even though it's on our doorstep every day. There's examples, and we need to do everything that we can to get people into transit. And it just makes good economic sense. Moving workers around and having workers not, pay so much money into transit means they have more money to put back into the local economy, into local shops and restaurants and services and things like that. It's just a no-brainer for me. So, I think that's the end goal. But I mean, this is a good first step. And hopefully it just starts this broader conversation. There's appetite in across BC for well-funded and affordable and safe and accessible transit. I go to Union of British Columbia municipalities, as I mentioned before, and it's a topic that everyone talks about. So it's not the most important one. I think affordability and I think public safety are kind of top of mind. But just after that, I think having cheap transit is in there. So yeah, we'll see what TransLink does. We'll see, if they can afford to do this, or we'll see if they make a report. But yeah, or we'll also see, if other cities try and, follow suit with like a pilot, like a free bus pilot or something, or because, it's about time. And I know there's transit activists and aficionados, that kind of frown on the idea of free transit. Just in terms of, it has to be funded somehow, and I get that. And I've taken a few transportation classes. One was at SFU with Leanne Roderick, and it was great. And we definitely broached that subject a lot. And there's a book called Human Transit that we studied, and he's kind of the author of that book is kind of against it as well. So I understand the trepidation there in terms of like we don't want to sacrifice, frequency and, expansion of services, for, affordability essentially. I get that, but I think it can be done in a way where if we in general, tax the more wealthy to fund, things like transit. Then we can have both. We can have free transit, and we can have a glorious, safe transportation system that reaches all corners of our beautiful province.
I guess to end off this interview, what would you say are the next steps for this advocacy, or what is the timeline like for the province getting involved with something like this?
That's a really good question, because I've had a few motions, and oftentimes when it leaves council chambers, it's just kind of like into the ether a little bit, and it's like kind of out of my hands in a sense. When I pass a motion, they don't go, okay, great, here, like, we'll expect to hear from us in 6 months. Like, it just kind of goes into that kind of bureaucratic machine, and it comes back at some point. Maybe we'll get a report or something, maybe in the next year. Or I passed a motion recently on really bright LED headlights, and again, road safety and public safety. And, you know, I was asked the same question. I'm like, I don't know, actually, you know, but it turns out Transport Canada actually did a survey where they released it across the country. A Bloc Québécois MP actually brought a parliamentary petition to ban these LED headlights. And then, of course, it went to the Federation of Canadian Municipalities, which just happened last week in Edmonton, where delegates from across Canada overwhelmingly voted to support, you know, changing the regulations on these bright LED headlights. So that's one thing where, like, I didn't know at first, but that there is this, it does happen. There is this sort of kind of slow churning thing that happens. And so, but even then, like now after FCM is going to advocate now to Transport Canada to change the regulations. So it is kind of now out of my hands, but a lot of that's a kind of a big feeling when you pass a motion in council. It's like, I don't know, now what? Like, what happens next? You know? And I am so new, right? So it's like, oftentimes it's like, okay, I guess now on to the next thing. And that's just it. Like, everything moves so fast, and I've got another four motions next council meeting, and then, you know, things like that. So it's just, things just move so fast, and you kind of forget that you actually passed motions. And actually, the Vision Zero, that thing that came the other day, that was a result of a motion that Councillor Maloney passed. It's like, now we're getting our motions come back as full reports. Or like, there was one on cooling rights for that me and Councillor Maloney both authored, and that came back as a report, and it was looking at giving $1,000 fines to landlords who refuse renters to install an air conditioning in their apartment, because that's been happening, you know. So yeah, it's a bit of a slow process, but yeah, we'll see what happens, and I expect some movement around, you know, about a year from now.
Once again, that was our interview with Vancouver City Councillor Sean Orr on a motion that he recently passed in City Council to introduce a low-income transit pass for the city of Vancouver.
Volunteering at CJSF 90.1 FM is a great experience and is easy to get started. So I'll tell you a little bit about it in the hope that you reach out. As this station is run almost entirely by volunteers, you have a variety of ways to get active at CJSF. Every department can use a little bit of help. Arts and entertainment. Well, you can write and produce reviews, conduct interviews of local musicians, the music library, acquiring, organizing, reviewing, and compiling charts. Public affairs. Interviewing groups, attending events, recording lectures. Public relations. Postering, graphic design, and programming. You can host your own show or work on a collective. Production, audio editing, and PSA building. And once you feel comfortable, you can even volunteer to help the volunteers. So volunteer with us at CJSF 90.1. Email us at vol4cjsf@sfu.ca.
It's true. It's very easy to volunteer here at CJSF 90.1 FM. And if that's something that you would want to get involved with, yeah, go on our website, cjsf.ca. Go follow us at CJSF Music and CJSF Talk at Instagram. And check us out. We are a very low barrier space for anyone wanting to get involved with the world of radio. All right, we have reached the very end of this hour of Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. I want to thank you all so much for tuning in this hour. In about a minute, we have Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman, as well as a lot of other amazing programs coming your way. But also tomorrow, we have Intravenous with Public Affairs and Talk Coordinator Nicole Hines. This week on Intravenous, Nicole will be sharing an interview that she did with the band Salthorse, based out of Calgary, Alberta, to talk about their album Lucky Teeth and their upcoming show at Sled Island on Friday, June 19th at the Palomino. later in the hour for tomorrow. Nicole will also play an interview that she did with Kagan Go, a Vancouver-based Chinese-Canadian multidisciplinary artist whose work spans memoir, poetry, playwriting, filmmaking, and mental health advocacy. He's also featured as an author at the 14th Annual Literasian Festival. It's a lot of things, and there is always so much going on here at CJSF, so make sure you tune into that tomorrow at 10 a.m. But until then, please take a listen to Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. Thank you for tuning in.
Hi, I'm